Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of elite mountain biking. Before we get started with this week's episode, once again I just want to say thanks to everyone that's been in touch. We really appreciate it. We've had some great feedback and some lovely comments. Keep them coming. We'd really like to see some photos of you out on your bike, so if you can, then tag us in photos on Instagram and Facebook. We're really excited to see what you're up to. Also, don't forget to give us a follow on social media. We've got a competition at the moment to win a signed O'Neill jersey that was signed by Greg Minnar, the Fort William World Cup winner. That competition closes on the 30th of June, and all you have to do to be in it to win it is to follow us on either Instagram, where we're Downtime Podcast, or on Facebook, where we're The Downtime Podcast, before the 30th of June, and we'll pick one of our followers at random. We wish you all the best of luck. Okay, on to episode 12. This week, we've got another strength and conditioning coach for you. It's Ben Plenger from Mountain Bike Strength Factory. We talked to Ben about a number of different things, so age-specific training, looking at different age groups and what their requirements are. We talk about the details of recovery and tapering for events. We look at the importance of upper body strength and many other things. Ben's been kind enough to give us a competition prize. So lucky winner will get to choose from either Ben's bodyweight conditioning strength program or his kettlebell program. And we'll also get his nutrition program for free. All you need to do to be in with a chance to win that is to go and find any of the social media posts for the Ben Plenger episode on either Instagram or Facebook, and tag a friend in the comments who you think will enjoy the podcast. On the 7th of July, we will draw a winner and we'll get in touch. Okay, without further ado, here's episode 12 with Ben Plenger. Ben Plenger, welcome to the Downtime Podcast.
Hey buddy, how's it going?
I'm good, man. Are you?
Yeah, really good. Enjoying a bit of spring sunshine. Looking forward to riding my bike on the weekend.
Excellent, good stuff. Yeah, summer's on the way, hopefully.
For sure.
So, for anyone that doesn't know any much about you, can you give us a bit of a background on who you are and what you do in the mountain bike world for us?
Yeah, so my name's Ben and I run Mountain Bike Strength Factory. And basically what I do is I do mountain bike strength and conditioning, performance coaching, programming for mountain bikers of all levels, from, I guess, average Joe who rides on a weekend and maybe does the odd race every year, up to, you know, World Cup level and Enduro World Series level riders and racers. I'm based out of Bristol in the southwest of England. I have a really good gym facility there that I get to use. But I also coach people, you know, using online tools like Skype and online training apps all across the country and even a couple of people in Europe and beyond. I'm in this game because I love mountain biking. I've been a coach and personal trainer for about 7 years now. And what it's all about for me is I want to train someone who wins a World Cup or World Champs or a World Series race or all three.
Excellent. It's a good aspiration to have. So who have you got on your books at the minute that you might be able to fulfill that with?
Yeah, so I'm working with a number of individuals, but also a couple of teams. So both based out of Bristol area, I've got the Wide Open Mag team riding on Nukeproof bikes this year. And so I've got some pretty exciting riders on there. Got a good fast youth rider for the future called Morgan Tyrrell from the Valleys in South Wales. Up in Elite there, we've got Kai Forte, and there's Veronique Sandler as well, who's up and coming Kiwi shredder, who's just had a really good result with the first BDS. And then also I work with Intense Racing UK, where I train most of the team members there, including like Andrew Titley, Sam Flockhart on the Enduro, AJ Jones, also a top Enduro racer here in the UK, and Charlie Hatton, who I think is going to be a very big name in the coming years and is already stamping his mark, I guess, in his first year elite coming out of junior with a podium at his first elite BDS on the weekend.
Yeah, awesome. You've got quite a crew there. That's a good bunch.
Yeah. Nice. Just getting there.
Nice. So you coach people of a lot of different ages. Can we talk a little bit about how an approach to training might change whether you're kind of 16 or 40? Like what are the key things that you would change, and how would you tailor training towards age groups?
Yeah, for sure. So it is different. It is very different for those different age groups because they've all got such different things going on in their lives. And also, they've usually got quite different goals. So, you know, if you take a youth or junior, you know, an under 18 rider, you know, the reality is that, you know, you're working around GCSEs and school term times and when their parents can get them to the gym and all that sort of thing. So for me, as a coach, it's about, you know, working closely with the parents who, luckily, none of the parents I work with are pushy in any way. They're like real nice, chilled out. They're supportive and loving, but without being those nightmare parents that you see on the sideline of like kids' football matches screaming at the kids. And so for those younger kids, when you program their training and get them in the gym, it's really about creating, I think, positive habits for them that mm-hmm. they can be in. Teaching them how to look after themselves, how to warm up, how to move well, how to get, you know, basic body weight movements, press ups, pull ups, moving on to barbell movements like, you know, squats and deadlifts. And it's just about building a strong foundation with good habits, but without taking the fun out of it. And the thing I always stress to pretty much all my riders, but especially those young ones and any young riders listening, is that, you know, if I've written on your training program that you need to do some sprints or go to the gym today, but you get home from school or college and the sun's shining and your mates are going to the trails, then screw the program. You know, you're 16, go and ride your bike at the trails, you know, because in the long run, that's probably going to serve you better because, you know, fit and strong is great. But if your skills aren't up to par or if you're unhappy or if you end up resenting training by the time you're 18, then that's not going to be productive or sustainable. So,
cool. Sounds like a good approach. What are the kind of fundamentals that you would, you know, encourage the younger people to learn in the gym at that point? Like, what sort of stuff should they be trying to get the hang of?
Yeah. So, I guess just balance, really. You get like a lot of young lads and all they want to do is press up some bench press because they want to look a bit hench and stuff. And, you know, you need to balance it out. Do the big lifts, like the squats and the deadlifts, do some single leg work, a bit of upper body pushing, a bit of upper body pulling, a bit of core work and get that mobility right and learn as well how to, you know, warm up and prepare yourself both for training, but also then for riding and racing as well. So I think, yeah, it's just making sure that they can be quite self-sufficient and learn how they're supposed to do things rather than getting a young lad, especially they're awful for it, who just comes to you a bit later on, maybe with really bad habits that he's picked up from well-meaning friends and stuff like that. And then you have to say, right, we need to start again with this, because often it's not been so good up till then.
So variety is key then, making sure there's plenty of different areas in the program and different things to focus on.
Yeah, for sure. And just listening to them and, you know, bodies changing and that sort of thing. And so, you know, how do you feel? Is this too much? Can you do more? Do you want to do more? Are you enjoying the training? I think has got to be the ultimate question. Are you enjoying it? Because if they're not enjoying it, then what's the point? You know, are you still enjoying riding and racing your bike? If the answer is yes, then wicked. Hopefully I'm doing something right and the parents are doing something right. If the answer is no, then we're wasting everyone's time and their money. So,
and at that younger age, would you say there's a kind of a standout area of a training program that is more important than others, be that the actual riding your bike bit or the long endurance stuff or strength or, mobility, flexibility?
Yeah. When you look at those under 18s, you can see that, I guess the more developed kids, the ones who maybe started puberty earlier or who were just, yeah, more physically developed and are a bit bigger, tend to do better.
Right.
So, you know, so at the end of the day, I think strength does go a long way, especially when you look at like downhill and that sort of thing. And like your relative strength and weight when you compare it to the bike and the sort of tracks they're riding But at the end of the day, it's, you know, it is skill and that bike handling, you know. So the lads that come across some motocross or something, they're normally very good at that. Or, you know, the kids who are well into the dirt jump and BMX scene, you know, they've normally got mad skills, you know, that I'll never have probably. And I think ultimately that's where it's at. So combine that with being strong and, you know, maybe starting puberty before the other lads or girls in your category gives you a big advantage.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So I guess building good fundamental and foundational movement capability from a young age so that when you do have a long career of training, you're moving well and exactly. Your body's doing what it should do, right?
Exactly that, yeah. And it's all about, you know, the theme that you'll probably get from many people you talk to in this podcast, you know, in the past and looking forwards, is always consistency pretty much, you know, will always trump short-term intensity. And consistency comes from not being injured, and that comes from training intelligently and moving well and looking after yourself and having good habits.
Okay. So, you know, even early on, young people worth having some kind of outside assistance and support from a coach just to have a look.
Well, if you are going to, you know, send your kid, or if you are a youth or junior rider, and if you are thinking, right, we're going to get them stronger, then yeah, use a coach, use a program, just to, you know, or, you know, a knowledgeable person just to help you get those basics right. But at the end of the day, if they go to school where they, by the sounds of it, they don't do much PE and stuff at school anymore, but just, you know, do play other sports as well. So you're a more rounded athlete. Go and run, go and play football, play tennis, whatever you want, you know, go rock climbing, any of those things, whatever you want to do. And then that just creates a well-rounded young athlete who can then decide to be a mountain biker or just ride for fun or whatever they want to do, really.
Awesome. Good advice. So what about those of us that are maybe a little bit older, maybe have less time available to us and maybe a few aches and pains from years of throwing themselves on the ground? Any thoughts for that other end?
Yeah, well, again, in a way it's similar. It's all about balancing the amount of time you've got available. So if you start to look then to like masters and veterans category and fourth, you know, even I train people in grand vets who are still out smashing it and training hard. You've got to understand as you get older, your ability to recover would decrease and you'll be able to tolerate less training than when you were in your 20s, for instance. And then you've also got to balance things like, you know, I've got a kid on the way, you know, so my training is no doubt going to suffer when baby number one arrives later this year. And if you're like, you know, you're working 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and you've got two kids and you set yourself a big goal of a certain race or event, then really you've got very little time to train. So setting yourself, number one, I think if you're going to coach yourself and make your own program, is be realistic about what you can actually do and what's sustainable. Because just like all the New Year's resolutions people every January, and they're like, I'm going to go to the gym every day, you know, so to lose the fat, or I'm going to do this and that. And they set this crazy routine that they can stick to for about 2 weeks when they're keen. And then they just fall badly off the wagon. And then that's it. Then they don't go to the gym for weeks. And it's the same, I think, I see with quite a few very enthusiastic riders, and they're like, yeah, right, I've entered this race, I've entered the Hard Rock Enduro, and it's like 45k or whatever, I'm gonna smash myself for the next 4 months to get ready for it. And actually you need to realize that, you know, you've got this whole other life and you don't have time to smash yourself 4 days a week or 5 days a week, because the reality is you can ride on a Sunday morning with your mates. And then maybe you can get to the gym one day, and maybe you get one training ride in the week, or maybe two if you're lucky and when the clocks change. And so I think be realistic with the time and energy that you have available. And then, again, look after yourself. People think it's all about doing the hard miles, the super tough interval sessions, when actually, especially if you do like a manual job, you know, like maybe you're a builder, or a landscape gardener or something like, you know, anything like that, then actually, you know what? You need to, your training needs to have a real focus on looking after your body and your back. And so it's core training, it's mobility and stretching, you know, maybe finding the time and money for a massage or something like that. Or it might be going for a swim, you know. It's basically all those things that people generally don't do, in my experience. And then if you do have the time and if you do have the energy, then by all means, you know, do some intense training. Just make sure you have time to recover in between those sessions, especially as you get 40 plus.
How can you give any guidance on how to know when you need that recovery time? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess so. So I guess we've all been on those rides where you get on the bike and after you get warmed up and you feel like Lance Armstrong when he's been on the good drugs, you know, and you're absolutely flying, aren't you? And your legs feel good and your lungs feel good. And someone, one of your mates will say, oh, you're going well today. And then we've also been on those rides where, you know, you get on that first or second climb and you're just, straight away your legs are dead and you're hanging out the back and you're like, what's going on here? And so I guess it's just about listening to your body. Are you starting every training session, whether it's the gym or on the bike, with aching, sore legs? You know, if you're a pro athlete in your 20s and that's all you do for a living, then that might well be fine. That might just be the lifestyle you've chosen. But if you're working a full-time job with a family and you only train a few, you know, then maybe that means you're doing a bit too much, or maybe you're not sleeping enough, or maybe you're not eating well. So I think it's just, I know it sounds really cliched and wishy-washy, but it, you know, it is about listening to your body really and thinking, how do I feel? Am I tired all the time? Am I like hitting the snooze button 15 times every morning and dreading training? Or do I feel refreshed in the morning? Do I feel ready to train? Do I feel like I've got the energy to commit to the training session properly? Or am I just going through the motions here to tick it off on my program?
Okay, interesting. So if you've got that fatigue and that feeling of, you know, constant soreness and not being able to ride or perform in a ride or a training session as you should, what would you look at first for that? Would you go to your diet or your sleep, or would it just be to kind of cut back on training for a couple of days?
Yeah, I think all of the above, really. I think, you know, stop then, have a look back. Say, how many weeks in a row have I been doing this for? Because generally, you know, you should work in some sort of cycle, maybe 3 weeks of training followed by a recovery week. And a lot of people don't do that. They think, if I have a recovery week, I'm going to lose my fitness. And all that sort of thing. So maybe have a look back and think, God, you know what? I've been going nonstop here for 6, 7, 8 weeks. So you need to build in a recovery week where you do less and look after yourself more. Things like sleep is a lot easier said than done, as I'm going to fully appreciate when my baby arrives. You know, it's easy for me to say, because right now, I go to bed at 9 o'clock every night and I get up at 5:30 feeling pretty damn good. And I'm lucky to do that, you know. But it's not that simple for everyone, but have a look. How can you maybe get to bed earlier? Or how can you improve your sleep with a darker room, or, you know, a nicer pillow, or any, you know, make your room quieter or anything like that. And then nutrition wise, I mean, you've got to start with the basics before you start with supplements. But, you know, are you eating real food, or are you eating relying on sugar and processed crap all the time? You know, are you going day to day surviving on caffeine, or do you really have good energy levels? Do you know what I mean? Rather than a lot of people seem to be, you know, as soon as you take away the caffeine, they can't function.
Yeah.
They're just thriving on well, not thriving. They think they're thriving on stimulants and things like that. And so it's just about getting the basics right. Eat loads of veggies, you know, good quality. I'm not, well, I won't even go into that. It's a whole hours and hours of podcasts, to be honest. And
okay, so you mentioned recovery weeks. What would a recovery week look like? What sort of things can I do? What sort of things should I be doing? And what kind of things should I totally avoid?
Okay, so basically what we're looking to do is reduce the general stress on your body. Okay, so if you're used to training for 15 hours a week, then maybe you reduce it to 8 or 10 hours that week. And you can also reduce the intensity to a certain extent as well. So if maybe you're used to doing a really savage, you know, couple of hour interval session one day of the week, then you can reduce the number of the intense intervals and things like that. Similarly, with your strength training, you know, you can, you know, still take an hour or 45 minutes to go to the gym, do your warm up, but, you know, drop the weights right down, focus on moving with a good form and good technique, and then spend some of the extra time on doing like some mobility work or something like that. Other things you can do is sometimes people like to just spend a little time away from the bike on a recovery week, and you might go for a swim or go for a walk or go and get a massage or something like that. So I guess there's no hard and fast rules, except, you know, everyone is different. Don't be afraid to take a couple of extra days off, you know, totally off, so you're properly resting, and just do what feels good. You know, if what feels good to you is to go and do a recovery ride, you know, where you go and spin your legs out for an hour at really low intensity, either indoors or outdoors, then that's cool. Do that. For some people, maybe the older ones and people who are a bit less fit, then actually, you know, I'd probably just go for total rest rather than the recovery ride, just to literally take some time out. That is the time, those recovery weeks, when you actually build in your fitness, you know. So at the end of the training session, you're actually, whether it's strength or on the bike, you're less fit and less strong at the end than when you started, because you've just had all that stress on your body and you'll be less able to perform. And then it's the recovery time after that session or after a block of training where the adaptations happen in your body, allowing you then to go forward as a fitter, stronger mountain bike rider or athlete or whatever.
Okay, so super important, but it doesn't mean I have to completely stop training. I just need to reduce intensity, listen to my body, and just wind things down for a week or so. I don't get to sit
exactly.
I don't get to sit on the couch and eat ice cream all week.
No. And on that note as well, it's worth bearing in mind, especially for people who might be carrying a little extra weight as well, is that, you know, the amount of food you eat should reflect the amount of activity you do. So if in a recovery week you eat your same diet as if you're doing 15 hours of training a week, but you're only doing half of that, then you're going to end up in quite a big calorie surplus probably, and potentially putting on weight, which is, you know, for some people is a problem, for some people it isn't, but it's just worth bearing in mind.
Okay, so winding down the food intake as well as winding down the training volume and intensity.
Yeah, exactly. And depending on what you do day to day, you probably want to look at reducing your carbohydrate intake on a recovery week as well, because, you know, unless you're doing a physical job and you're out and about a lot, then potentially you just don't need that many carbs on a recovery week because you're doing less training.
Okay, good stuff. So we've talked about different age groups. Is there any reason that you would program differently for men or for women?
Yeah, so I do work with a lot of women actually across, you know, downhill and enduro and trail riders. And I think that the one thing, it's not different, but is almost more important for the women, that really makes a difference is that upper body strength. And it's in no way sexist, it's just reality that most women who come in a gym, when they first come to see me, can't do full press ups and can't do pull ups. Whereas most men who come and see me, I'm talking about people of a healthy weight here, not overweight, they can. And that's just how it is. Men tend to be stronger than women. And so for the women, improving that upper body strength is a game changer for them. So it's things like, building up that strength to do full depth controlled press ups and like maybe horizontal rows where you pull your body weight up to a bar, or you can use like the straps like the TRX and things that you'll see in a lot of gyms now. and then also building up to be able to do things like pull-ups. And it's really interesting, a little anecdote, if you like, unscientifically proven, but something that keeps cropping up over the last few years I've done this, is there seems to be a real threshold for the, going and getting an uplift is now a really common thing now, whether you're a downhiller or whether you ride trail bikes and enduro, whatever. And when I've been working with a woman or programming a female rider, it's when they go on an uplift day a couple of months down the line and they're like, you know what? I was able to lift my own bike up onto the uplift trailer on my own. Didn't need to ask for any help. Could lift it up there. Felt really strong. And then I felt really good on their bike, really good on the bike. And that seems to be a little, a little milestone that seems, once a woman's strong enough to lift a downhill bike easily, comfortably onto the uplift trailer, they tend to find they're a lot stronger on the bike as well. That's just, I guess, an anecdote. So,
okay, interesting. Sounds like I better do some upper body work then, because I've struggled getting my bike onto the trailer before.
Yeah, they can be pretty awkward, actually. Especially if bikes getting longer and longer. It's definitely hard watching the mint these days.
Yeah.
Plus, you always get the strap caught on a pedal or something.
Exactly.
But that seems to be the thing. It's all about, for most women, get the upper body strong. That's the first priority, really. So then they can push and pull and just support their body weight better on the bike.
Okay. And are there any specific exercises that you'd recommend to help with that?
Yeah. So basically, So dividing it into push and pull, you can't go wrong. Well, you can go wrong. People do press ups horribly, but press ups is always a good place to start. And it can be tricky as well. If you can't do a full press up, knowing, well, how do I get from where I am now to doing full press ups? And so you need to look at exercise regression. So if press up is where you want to get to, but you're not there yet, you need to regress the exercise to easier versions, whether it's doing it on an incline. So maybe you do a press up on something that's raised up so that then there's less weight on your arms, more weight in your feet.
So like using a step or something like that.
Yeah, you can use depending on where you're training, you could use the side of your kitchen table in your house if it's sturdy. Or if you go to the gym, a really good place to do it is the squat rack or Smith machine, where you can move the bar gradually down. So start with it at waist height and just do really controlled reps, chest to the bar. And once you can do those really controlled, you move the bar one hole or one slot or whatever lower.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually you just work your way down the rack over the weeks, keeping track of which hole you're on, what you're able to do, always moving, with control, always, pain free. And then over time you move down and gradually, 6 weeks, you're on the floor and you're doing full press ups. Also you can hold a plank, but on your hands, so a press up position plank. That's a good way to develop the strength in the core that you need, and also your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
But other exercises as well are, like I said, horizontal rack is literally the opposite of a press up. So you're lying on your back, chest up bar. That's a very valuable exercise and underrated and underused, I think. And then effectively push and pulling, but overhead. So building up to doing a pull-up, which you can do in a similar way to press up. So you regress the exercise. So you could use an assisted machine. You could use a lat pull-down machine. You could use rubber bands. You could start by just holding your body weight to develop your grip strength. And then also pushing overhead. So for instance, building that overhead strength is harder without a kit, really, because then we're talking about handstands, and that's pretty technical.
Yeah.
And, you could definitely end up with a face plant going on there. But you can also use, so ideally dumbbells are a good way to do that. So like overhead pressing with dumbbells, which most people who come and see me, male and female, are very weak at. And there's a big return in your shoulder. I guess robustness is the best way to describe it, because we've all done that Superman over the bars, and strong mobile shoulders are a lot more robust in that situation than tight restricted and weak shoulders, which end up dislocated, torn, broken, and otherwise not good.
Okay, so not just will you get better at riding and controlling your bike, but you're also going to be more resilient to damage in a crash.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to guarantee you're not going to hurt yourself, obviously, but can't give you a money back guarantee if you break your collarbone or something. But yeah, it is that simple. Stronger, more mobile should mean for most people, most of the time, more resilient, more robust. And, you know, I guess on a very basic level, the best body armor going isn't the latest D3O knee pad, it's muscle.
Right.
Yeah, you know, pack a bit of muscle on, and it does help a bit.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So if people have been training for a while, maybe they've got a specific event in mind, say the Hard Rock, and they want to, you know, they want to peak for that event, so they want to make sure that they're in the best possible condition they can be on the day of that race. Have you got any advice on the build up? You know, maybe kind of 1-2 months away, and then the kind of couple of weeks leading up to the event, and what people should be doing.
Yeah, for sure. So first thing is get a bit of paper out, or, you know, use your phone diary, just make a rough plan and work back from the event to where you are now. First of all, you know, cross out those weekends and stuff that you can't do because you're going to a wedding or you got a family holiday or you're away with work. And then you realize, okay, I've got this much time. And, you know, if that's going to be your main focus, your main race this summer, then you'll probably want to do some kind of taper before it. Or if, you know, you race a lot and it's one of your A races, i.e. your most important ones, then you'll definitely want to taper. So that word is often misunderstood. But the way I apply it is it's usually around a week before. It can be longer for like particularly long events, but it's a real reduction in the amount of volume, but you've still got to maintain some race intensity. So by that, I mean, if you're doing like, let's say a downhill race, then the race intensity are things like riding your bike over challenging terrain, i.e. doing downhill riding. And it's also that ability to maximally sprint, whether it's out of the gate or between sections of the track. So leading up to it, you want to maintain that ability, but not so, you don't want to do so much that you're tired out, because you want to hit the race feeling sharp and fresh. Mm-hmm. So the sharpness comes from, you know, for a race on the weekend, maybe on the Wednesday, you do a sprint session where you go out and you spin the legs out, you do a proper warm up, and you might only do 2 sprints, 5 seconds each, which is enough to keep you sharp, i.e. to maintain that sprint ability that hopefully you've developed in training, but not enough to fatigue you. Because if you do too much in the run up to the race, then you turn up to the race and you're fatigued. And if you don't do enough in the run up to it, then you might turn up feeling fresh, but you've lost that sharpness you had, that and that explosiveness that you need for the sprint and things like that. So you're looking to decrease volume whilst maintaining intensity, and also, you know, still riding your bike so you feel good on it, so you feel at home on the bike.
Mm-hmm. Let's say you've got an event, maybe like the Hard Rock, where you've got a fairly long practice loop the day before the race.
Yeah.
How do you approach that to ensure that you're not, you know, you're getting the most amount of learning out of that day, but you're not ruining yourself for the race?
Yeah, so that's a good one. And I think it really depends on having a self-awareness of your level of fitness. So, you know, for the Intense Racing UK team that I coach, I'm working with, we're all going to the Hard Rock, the whole team, this summer. And so obviously I'm working there with Enduro World Series riders who are fit as a fiddle, and they can do, you know, 3 or 4 big 40K days in a row at high intensity. So for them, actually, the best thing for them is to go out and to practice, you know, at something approaching, you know, race pace. I mean, obviously everyone's got their own way of doing these things. Some people prefer to practice slow to feel like they gather more information. Certainly, I've seen, I think online, Joe Barnes does that. He practices the World Series slow with a head cam, with a GoPro, with a mic, and he does pace notes like a rally, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I never heard of that before. Maybe you can get him on and tell you more about it. But yeah, so which, you know, which is really unique, and it makes a lot of sense, and that works for him. Whereas someone else might feel more comfortable riding at a bit, you know, riding at pace, so that when you're practicing sections, you're practicing them at something similar to race pace, so you know how they ride at different paces. And then obviously you don't want to nail yourself the day before by going max effort on the fire road sprint or anything like that. So, you know, turn the pedals over because you want to be hitting the next bit in practice with some pace, but don't absolutely kill yourself. And then there's someone else, and this is their only event of the summer. For them, that distance itself is a real test, let alone doing it twice. And half the appeal of the Hard Rock is a beer tent on the Saturday. Then it's quite, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. Like, I think that's awesome. And that's a big part of the appeal of it. But for them, it's going to be very different. And it's about, on that Saturday, Friday practice, it's about taking your time, looking after yourself, eating enough, resting, breaking the stages up into sections so you don't get too fatigued. It's about all of that, really. It's about, I don't want to say survival, but that sounds a bit harsh, I think. But it's about just looking after yourself so that you can really commit and make the most of the race day, both in terms of having fun and also in terms of getting the best result that you can.
Okay, good. And for that week following the race, what kind of stuff should you be doing? Obviously, it's not a full intensity training week again, but how should you kind of work your way back into it?
Yeah, so it really depends where you're going after that. So I guess typically in the UK here, races on a Sunday. And I always say to my riders, especially the top ones who race a lot over the summer, is, you know, if you're racing the following weekend, then the minute you cross the line on Sunday, your recovery and preparation starts for that next race, mm-hmm. unless it's a very low priority race and you don't care about it. You know, so as soon as it finishes, you know, you're hitting your recovery shake, you're doing a cool down, you know, by riding around or maybe going on turbo. Before you drive home, you're doing some stretching, mobility. You know, even if you get home at midnight, you know, you need to be on top of your recovery then. And then your program, and that Monday to Friday before the next one that I will write, really depends on where they're at in their training and that sort of thing. But it's got to be a bit of recovery. If it's going to be another high priority race, then it's the same as before. It's kind of like a continued taper. But if you're always working like that, then over the course of a summer, let's say you had 5 weekends in a row, then you actually find that you get very little training done and you can lose fitness. So there has to be a point where you say, right, this week we need to fit some more meaningful training in, which may be at the detriment to a race that you regard as a bit less important.
Okay.
So if, however, you know, you're finishing the Hard Rock or whatever it is on the Sunday, and you know your next race isn't for a month because there's a big gap in the calendar, then depends what level you're at, basically. But if you want to go get a Mackey D's on the way home, if that's what makes you happy, then, you know, do it. Like, I'm, as a coach, I don't care. I'm like, happy rider is a successful rider, in my opinion. So, yeah, you're not racing for a month, then actually you could be a bit more chilled out. And, you know, it's less important on the day. And then your training program then continues that following week, and it really depends on where you're at. It might be a recovery week, or you might be going to quite an intense training week. It really depends where the other races fall.
All right, that makes sense. So looking at it from a calendar perspective, yeah,
cool. Yeah, like, you can't look at any of them in isolation. You know, one of the things that we do with the riders as part of the planning is, you know, normally by January, all the race dates are out and everyone's entered the stuff they're going to enter. They know what they're doing and when, and we can then map it all out. Right, we're doing this race, this race, this race. And then I can create a fairly rough initially overview plan of when the hard training is, when the recovery is, when we're tapering for those key events. And then, you know, we go from there, and then the detail gets added along the line. And then inevitably something will change because, you know how it is, an event will, I don't know, something will happen, or someone will fall off their bike, or someone will get a cold, you know, and it never stays the same for long.
Okay, cool. So we're getting pretty close to the end of our time together today, but there's a question that we've been asking a fair amount of our guests, and that is, if you had somewhere in the region of £100, so kind of what you could easily spend on a pair of fancy pedals to, you know, invest in improving your riding, where would you go with that £100? I mean, it can be on a service, on a product, on a gadget, or on a bike component. What would you use that £100 on?
Well, yeah. Given that I've actually listened to all of your podcasts so far, I really should have been better prepared for this question, Chris. So obviously the best thing you could do would be give it to me for some coaching to come down to the gym. But assuming you don't live in Bristol, I would say, yeah, some form of coaching, whether it's on the bike for skills or with like a decent strength and conditioning coach. I'm a big believer in both, obviously. So a good strength and conditioning coach or personal trainer will put you in some really good habits, will help you to move well, will help you to lift safely within your limits. And, you know, that's a really good place to start. And for £100, you might get two sessions or maybe three sessions or something like that, or maybe group sessions. And similarly, I'm a really big believer in skills coaching at all levels. I think there's a real perception when I talk to people out riding, and I don't know why, but there's a real perception that skills coaching is only for beginners or if you're a bit crap or something, which I think is rubbish, frankly. I'm not saying I'm the fastest rider in the world or anything, but I've been riding since 96, minus a bit of a gap when I was in the army where I didn't really ride. But and the last few winters I've had coaching from a really great company called Pedal Progression down here in Bristol, and it's really transformed my riding and helped me to be a lot quicker, more confident, and just better rider. I think that when we look to other sports, I mean, I think right now I'd be right in saying that Andy Murray is like the number one tennis player in the world. So he's pretty good at whacking a ball. And he doesn't just go and whack balls around. Every session he's on the court, he's there with the coach, you know?
Yeah.
And it's this idea that for some reason, as a mountain biker, you don't need coaching. Oh, I know what I'm doing. Oh, okay, fair enough. And I think that even up to, you know, if I was gifted enough or committed enough to be an elite level mountain biker, I would have some sort of coaching. I really would, you know, because these days with all the video feedback and stuff as well, there's so many options to improve yourself as a rider. And I don't want that to sound like we're taking the fun out of it. You know, every ride you go on or whatever shouldn't be a training ride, or I'm trying to get better at turning left on this ride or whatever. But it's just part of what you do. And I think that when you ride well, with the age, you know, with or without a coach, then riding bikes is more fun. And that's what we're in the game of, isn't it?
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's part of the reason that I started this podcast, really. I mean, I had never done any coaching until fairly recently, where I did a few courses with A-Line in Sheffield. And not only were they good fun days out on the bike, but I got a lot quicker and started enjoying my riding a lot more. So I completely agree with you on that. It's definitely, definitely a good way to go.
Yeah, like this winter, I don't know if it's just my perception, but it seems to have been really wet, and like every ride is wet and bogging. And I just found this winter, my riding's come on a lot, personally. And all of a sudden, there's different lines available to you. You know, like the quick person you ride with who's like mad skills, and you see them like pop up onto the high, rooty, wet line and stuff like that to drop into a turn. And you always used to watch it and think, shit, how do they do that, you know? And then actually have some coaching, and then the key thing I think after coaching is you do actually need to then, you know, almost slow your riding down, think about applying what you've been taught until it's second nature, and then speed it up again. I think that's where people go wrong.
Yeah,
they just try and ride at the same old pace, and they just end up going to that default riding that they always did, and they're not really applying their coaching.
You
need to swallow your pride, drop in at the back of your group, ride slower, but try and make those body positions that you've been coached with, try and pump and move around like a good coach will teach you to, that body and bike separation. And then once that becomes second nature, you start to add in the speed again. And then all of a sudden you can get on that line that you never used to be able to get on because you just slid down the roots. But now you're going quicker, your body position's better, you can generate grip better. And yeah, for me, that coaching is a game changer. And I recommend people of all levels to get a good coach.
Excellent. Good recommendation. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Ben. We're pretty much at the end of our time today. But if people want to find out more about you, whereabouts can they find you, either on social media or website?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm on mtbstrengthfactory.com is my website, where you can find out about my coaching packages and as well as my online programs. And I'm also on Instagram as MTB Strength Factory, and Facebook as well. I'm not on Twitter because I'm busy enough with all the other social media. So I figured one less thing, and it just confuses me having too many of those things on at once.
Yeah, no worries. All right, good stuff. Well, thanks for joining us today, Ben. Much appreciated.
Yeah, man, it's a pleasure. Have a good summer of riding.
Cool, and you. Take care.
Cheers.
Bye. Well, that's it for episode 12. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I learned a lot from talking to Ben. If you've got any time on your hands, we'd really appreciate an iTunes review. It makes a massive difference to the way that iTunes sees us and lists us, and it means our podcast gets to more people, which has got to be a good thing. Okay, well, we'll be back on the 11th of July, where we've got another downhill world champion joining us to tell us their story. But until then, get out and ride.